Welcome to Agile for All's Humanizing Work Show. I'm Richard Lawrence.
And I'm Peter Green.
And we're here to dig into what it means to transform work to fit people better.
All right. So, Richard, you named your first company Humanizing Work.
I did in 2008 when I first went independent as an Agile trainer and coach. I had this sense that work didn't fit people. And if we transformed it to fit people better, then people would thrive more and work would be better. So it's kind of intuitive at that point and named it Humanizing Work without really fleshing out what that was about.
Uh-huh. So going just kind of on gut feel there.
Right. Yeah. And I know when we started working together a few years ago, that phrase really resonated with you. What was it about that?
It did. And as I think about what I'm passionate about at work, you know, one of the things, one of the problems that I see in almost every company that I have worked for or with is this issue that a lot of people are just kind of phoning it in. They're kind of punching the time card, making their paycheck, and going home. And
it's better than work.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I can't wait till Friday, or oh no, I got the Monday blues. Right, there are all these aspects of people complaining about work, and to me, I always loved work when it was meaningful work. And you know, there's Gallup has surveyed on this. There are Gallup surveys that talk about like 30% of U.S. workers are engaged, and something like 18% worldwide are engaged at work.
How do they define engagement?
They define it as volunteering their creativity, okay. Essentially, is how I would summarize. You know, there are more to it than that, mm-hmm. but volunteering their creativity while they're at work. And to me, that's a human tragedy that the vast majority of people go to work every day, and they kind of hate their job.
And that's most of our waking hours.
Most of our waking hours, right. So they're spending most of their waking hours doing something that's drudgery, that is mind-sucking, soul-sucking, not contributing to having a good life. And I think that carries over when they get home in their personal life. So to me, there's a human tragedy. I mean, there's an economic cost to that. They also have some other categories, like they have disengaged and actively disengaged as categories on this survey.
What is actively disengaged?
Well, actively disengaged is like office space style. They're kind of trying to sabotage the company.
Okay.
That's 18% of
really?
U.S. workers are actively disengaged. And they call that a $300 billion annual hit to the economy. So there's an economic hit to this. And you can imagine that, you know, people detracting from the value that a company's trying to create in the world.
Right.
And not only volunteering their creativity and their energy to making something cool, but actively trying to sabotage it, that's a huge economic cost. So I just when I heard the term humanizing work, to me that sounded like the opposite of the problem that we see in the world. So that's why I got excited about it.
Yeah, and in the last 10 years, we've had a chance to work with a lot of teams, a lot of individuals, a lot of organizations, and see what works and what doesn't. So what started as an intuitive sense that there was a mismatch between people and the work that the people did has started to show some themes, some patterns. And I think we've noticed four things. First, we've noticed that creativity is essential,
mm-hmm.
that people are more themselves, they're more effective in the world when they have a chance to be creative, when they have a chance to make things, to change things. And I don't mean creativity in the sense of
painting a picture or
right,
something like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, when people hear creativity, they think about the artistic sense of creativity.
Yeah.
But you can be working in a manufacturing job and thinking about ways to make your job work better.
Yeah.
And you're bringing creativity to the work.
Yeah.
So there's a pretty wide range there.
And you and I have talked about how our particular wisdom traditions that we subscribe to, that's a big part of that. But I see that in most wisdom traditions in the world, that part of the purpose of humanity is creation of
mm-hmm.
something.
Right.
We're trying to create something, and that might just be trying to create the bread that we eat today, or it might be trying to create something that makes a big difference for somebody else, creates meaning, creates emotion,
mm-hmm.
Creates peace in the world. It could be from I'm trying to make bread so that my family can eat, all the way to I'm trying to create world peace at,
right.
a, at a high
and,
level.
And the scale doesn't seem to actually matter.
Right.
Which was a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought people would be more motivated by this big purpose or creating big things. And what I've noticed is that it really comes down to connection with purpose.
Mm.
Like what the motivation researchers call relatedness.
Yeah. I also think that there's something about the context of our life in that moment. There is a context where if we don't get this bread made, we are going to be hungry.
Mm.
At that point, I don't really care too much about if I'm going to impact communities far and wide in the world. I care about whether my family's going to eat tonight. That's going to be the most meaningful thing for me today. Mm-hmm. And so context really matters as well when we talk about creativity.
Right.
Yeah.
So creativity is the first of the four themes. Uh-huh. The second theme that we've been talking about is collaboration.
Yeah.
The people are more effective in their work and feel more connected and motivated when they're doing it with other people.
It's like we can get some of the buzzwords in now, right?
There's synergy.
Synergy, right? when we're collaborating towards greater,
Yeah, I was trying not to say synergy because it's such a buzzword.
Yeah.
But that whole being greater than the sum of the parts,
yeah.
I think is an expression of this collaboration and human connection making work better.
For me, it's one of the things that I get most excited about working with clients is when we can work with a group that was calling themselves a team but not really functioning like a team, how we would describe it, mm-hmm. functions. I get really excited when there's almost like a night and day energy that happens when they start actually collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the things that the Agile movement has brought to work really effectively,
yeah.
is the focus on the team as the unit
mm-hmm.
that works together and gets things done.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I think this is also a place where we see that in the phrase humanizing work, work is both subject and object.
Subject and object? I'm not an English major, Richard.
Neither am I, but I like English. So in humanizing work, work functions as object, which is kind of what you expect. We're humanizing work. We're making work fit humans better. But it's also the subject where once you do that, work makes us more ourselves.
Mm.
We get to express our humanity more in our work when things like creativity and collaboration are there. So work becomes a humanizing force after you humanize work.
So work can impact humanity, mm-hmm. right? Work can change cultures, work can change what it feels like to be in an area, work can change how you feel when you come home at night, all of those things.
So, right, yeah. And it's like what you said earlier, we spend most of our waking hours at work. And so if our work can help us express who we are more fully, that's going to have impacts outside of work as well. And we see this among our clients.
Yeah. I just imagine that, 20 years from now, what if when somebody said, hey, I'm heading to work, people didn't say, oh, that must be terrible. Oh, sorry to hear that. But they said, great, what are you going to create today, right? Yeah.
The last couple themes are impact and growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can speak to those really well.
So impact, if we think about what impact means, it's how do we affect others is really what that means, right? So when we're humanizing work, when we're trying to create a more human-centric workplace, how does the work impact others? So if we think of the work of a team impacting customers, the work of a company impacting the community, or the work that I do impacting the team, how does it impact other people? And obviously we want it to have a positive impact. Right. What we see in a lot of companies is just a real disconnection with the work that I'm doing right now and how that impacts anybody else. I feel like I'm kind of checking a box, or I'm going down my task list, or I'm getting what I got assigned done. That is not meaningful to people. It doesn't move the needle. So we're looking at how does my work impact somebody.
Welcome to Agile for All's Humanizing Work Show. I'm Richard Lawrence.
And I'm Peter Green.
And we're here to dig into what it means to transform work to fit people better.
All right, so Richard, you named your first company Humanizing Work.
I did in 2008 when I first went independent as an Agile trainer and coach. I had this sense that work didn't fit people. And if we transformed it to fit people better, then people would thrive more and work would be better. So it's kind of intuitive at that point and named it Humanizing Work without really fleshing out what that was about.
Uh-huh, so going just kind of on gut feel there.
Right,
yeah.
And I know when we started working together a few years ago, that phrase really resonated with you. What was it about that?
It did, and as I think about what I'm passionate about at work, one of the problems that I see in almost every company that I have worked for or with is this issue that a lot of people are just kind of phoning it in. They're kind of punching the time card, making their paycheck, and going home. And
it's better than work.
Yeah, right. I can't wait till Friday, or oh no, I got the Monday blues. Right, there are all these aspects of people complaining about work, and to me, I always loved work when it was meaningful work. And Gallup has surveyed on this. There are Gallup surveys that talk about like 30% of U.S. workers are engaged, and something like 18% worldwide are engaged at work.
How do they define engagement?
They define it as volunteering their creativity, okay. essentially, is how I would summarize. You know, there are more to it than that, mm-hmm. but volunteering their creativity while they're at work. And to me, that's a human tragedy that the vast majority of people go to work every day, and they kind of hate their job.
And that's most of our waking hours.
Most of our waking hours, right. So they're spending most of their waking hours doing something that's drudgery, that is mind-sucking, soul-sucking, not contributing to having a good life. And I think that carries over when they get home in their personal life. So to me, there's a human tragedy. I mean, there's an economic cost to that. They also have some other categories, like they have disengaged and actively disengaged as categories on this survey.
What is actively disengaged?
Well, actively disengaged is like office space style. They're kind of trying to sabotage the company.
Okay.
That's 18% of
really?
U.S. workers are actively disengaged. And they call that a $300 billion annual hit to the economy. So there's an economic hit to this. And you can imagine that, you know, people detracting from the value that a company's trying to create in the world.
Right.
And not only volunteering their creativity and their energy to making something cool, but actively trying to sabotage it, that's a huge economic cost. So I just when I heard the term humanizing work, to me that sounded like the opposite of the problem that we see in the world. So that's why I got excited about it.
Yeah, and in the last 10 years, we've had a chance to work with a lot of teams, a lot of individuals, a lot of organizations, and see what works and what doesn't. So what started as an intuitive sense that there was a mismatch between people and the work that the people did has started to show some themes, some patterns. And I think we've noticed four things. First, we've noticed that creativity is essential,
mm-hmm.
that people are more themselves, they're more effective in the world when they have a chance to be creative, when they have a chance to make things, to change things. And I don't mean creativity in the sense of
painting a picture or
right,
something like that.
Yeah, yeah. When people hear creativity, they think about the artistic sense of creativity.
Yeah.
But you can be working in a manufacturing job and thinking about ways to make your job work better.
Yeah.
And you're bringing creativity to the work.
Yeah.
So there's a pretty wide range there.
And you and I have talked about how our particular wisdom traditions that we subscribe to, that's a big part of that. But I see that in most wisdom traditions in the world, that part of the purpose of humanity is creation of
mm-hmm.
something.
Right.
We're trying to create something, and that might just be trying to create the bread that we eat today, or it might be trying to create something that makes a big difference for somebody else, creates meaning, creates emotion,
mm-hmm.
Creates peace in the world. It could be from I'm trying to make bread so that my family can eat, all the way to I'm trying to create world peace at,
right.
a, at a high
and
level.
And the scale doesn't seem to actually matter,
right?
Which was a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought people would be more motivated by this big purpose or creating big things. And what I've noticed is that it really comes down to connection with purpose,
mm.
like what the motivation researchers call relatedness.
Yeah. I also think that there's something about the context of our life in that moment. There is a context where if we don't get this bread made, we are going to be hungry.
Mm.
At that point, I don't really care too much about if I'm going to impact communities far and wide in the world. I care about whether my family's going to eat tonight. That's going to be the most meaningful thing for me today.
Mm-hmm.
And so context really matters as well when we talk about creativity.
Right.
Yeah.
So creativity is the first of the four themes.
Uh-huh.
The second theme that we've been talking about is collaboration.
Yeah.
That people are more effective in their work and feel more connected and motivated when they're doing it with other people.
It's like we can get some of the buzzwords in now, right?
There's synergy.
Synergy, right? when we're collaborating towards greater,
Yeah, I was trying not to say synergy because it's such a buzzword.
Yeah.
But that whole being greater than the sum of the parts,
yeah.
I think is an expression of this collaboration and human connection making work better.
For me, it's one of the things that I get most excited about working with clients is when we can work with a group that was calling themselves a team but not really functioning like a team, how we would describe it,
mm-hmm.
functions. I get really excited when there's almost like a night and day energy that happens when they start actually collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the things that the Agile movement has brought to work really effectively,
yeah.
is the focus on the team as the unit
mm-hmm.
that works together and gets things done.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I think this is also a place where we see that in the phrase humanizing work, work is both subject and object.
Subject and object? I'm not an English major, Richard.
Neither am I, but I like English. So in humanizing work, work functions as object, which is kind of what you expect. We're humanizing work. We're making work fit humans better. But it's also the subject, where once you do that, work makes us more ourselves. Mm. We get to express our humanity more in our work when things like creativity and collaboration are there. So work becomes a humanizing force after you humanize work.
So work can impact humanity, mm-hmm. right? Work can change cultures. Work can change what it feels like to be in an area. Work can change how you feel when you come home at night, all of those things.
So, right. Yeah. And it's like what you said earlier. We spend most of our waking hours at work. And so if our work can help us express who we are more fully, that's going to have impacts outside of work as well. And we see this among our clients.
Yeah. I just imagine that, 20 years from now, what if when somebody said, hey, I'm heading to work, people didn't say, oh, that must be terrible. Oh, sorry to hear that. But they said, great, what are you going to create today, right? Yeah.
The last couple themes are impact and growth. Mm-hmm. And I think you can speak to those really well.
So impact, if we think about what impact means, it's how do we affect others is really what that means, right? So when we're humanizing work, when we're trying to create a more human-centric workplace, how does the work impact others? So if we think of the work of a team impacting customers, the work of a company impacting the community, or the work that I do impacting the team, how does it impact other people? And obviously we want it to have a positive impact. Right. What we see in a lot of companies is just a real disconnection with the work that I'm doing right now and how that impacts anybody else. I feel like I'm kind of checking a box, or I'm going down my task list, or I'm getting what I got assigned done. That is not meaningful to people. It doesn't move the needle. So we're looking at how does my work impact somebody else in a positive way.
Right, which implies some connection to those people.
Yeah, you would hope so, right? when people become disconnected from the impact of their work. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things we often focus on with clients, right? Is how can we connect the work that I'm doing today with the people it impacts?
Like, let's talk with customers. Find out what's going on with them.
Yeah.
Find out what effect our work has after we do it.
Right. And I know that in a lot of companies, the people doing the work are almost prevented, or sometimes literally prevented, mm-hmm. from being allowed to speak to customers. There's a trust issue there often, that they'll say something that won't represent the company well, or they'll make commitments. I'd much rather train somebody to not make those fundamental errors than prevent them from speaking to somebody.
Right. We had a funny experience with this at a conference a few months ago, where I was teaching on a tool for understanding customers, really a customer empathy tool. Uh-huh. And someone came up to me afterwards and said, I've heard that explained before, but never like that. Yeah, you really brought it to life. And what do you mean? And he said, well, it seems like you actually care about people. So the fact that...
You are correct.
Yes, that is the point. Yeah. So multiple times he'd been taught a tool for customer empathy and got the impression that you can use the tool without caring about people.
Seems like something's missing there.
Something is missing. So, so we're so disconnected that we can even use tools that are made for connection and miss the connection.
Yeah. So that's the impact part of it. Are we connected to the impact of our work? Is it meaningful to us? The other one is growth. And you'll read about growth in some of the engagement literature, sometimes referred to as mastery. For example, Dan Pink refers to it as mastery, our desire to get better at things. In Doocy and McGregor's work, they refer to it as potential. The potential to grow, the potential to be recognized for that growth. But this idea that we're constantly evolving, and when we don't, we feel stuck. We feel like we're doing the same thing over and over again, and that can just get boring. And I do think it is a core human characteristic that we have a desire to grow, to progress, to be better today than we were yesterday. And so that's how I would describe that.
Just individual growth?
Well, certainly it starts there, I think. I think that if we're not growing individually, then our ability to care about whether we're growing as a team, as a community, as an organization, is not there. So I think I would say that that's what we, table stakes, that's a foundational part, is that I have to be growing personally. But then certainly it's about growth of our team, growth of the organization. How does the team and the organization evolve over time and get better at what we do? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of sports analogies there, right?
Yeah, I've actually seen it go the other direction. Mm. I think a team of individuals who are growing certainly will lead to organizational growth. But a lot of times I see individual growth blocked by the lack of growth in an organization or lack of space for growth. And uh-huh. so sometimes you working on the context, working on a team or a larger system makes space for individuals to grow. And I've seen many cases where somebody on a team that their manager would have said, like, well, they're going to be the last one to grow yeah. or to get better. They just don't care. You make a change to the system around them, and suddenly they're one of the major contributors on the team.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's this cool thing I learned. So I'm a big basketball fan, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a book by Bill Simmons, and it's a gigantic book about the history of the National Basketball Association. And in there, he talks about the real challenge that any team has of maintaining a championship level. Hmm. So if you look, there have only been a few teams in the history of basketball, and really in any major sport, they're able to maintain that very top echelon. And as he's interviewed players that played on those teams, he calls it the secret. The secret to winning a championship is
creative that, name.
Yeah, the secret is that you have to be willing to give up on individual stats to sacrifice to the team good. And the teams that learn that are the ones that tend to win championships. And
so then, that's like passing rather than taking a shot?
Yeah, passing rather than taking a shot. And they're interesting to statistics about the economic cost of passing the ball rather than shooting the ball. So
what economic cost for who?
Meaning that if you look at basketball contracts, the points per game matters much more than assists per game.
Okay.
So you get paid for making baskets, not for helping others make baskets.
So this is like the Moneyball idea, where
exactly.
the wrong thing is valued
exactly.
financially.
There's a financial incentive to shoot and make a basket, uh-huh. and almost no financial. In fact, there's a financial disincentive to pass the ball. And so
I guess this is true in a lot of industries. You just don't have the clear statistics to trace it. But you think about what looks good in an interview for a software developer.
Yeah.
And what actually makes a team more effective?
Right.
They're not the same.
So one of my favorite stories about this is from Bell Labs. So Bell Labs was, you know, the icon of innovation for many decades. And since they did a lot of government work, they wanted to study the people that had the most patents at Bell Labs. What did they have in common? Did they go to the same school? Did they come from the same background? What did they have in common? And they went through all these possible commonalities. They couldn't find anything. The one variable that they found that they did have in common is that the people with the most patents all ate lunch with a guy named Bill Nyquist. Now, Bill Nyquist, to me, I know who he is because of my audio background. The Nyquist rate is a sampling rate. That was he was a scientist that was studying digital sampling, but not well known in the community at all. And so when they said, well, who is Bill Nyquist? And they would ask these people with a lot of patents. They say, who's Bill Nyquist? And they say, oh, I have lunch with him every couple of days in the lunchroom. Mm-hmm. He's like this old grandpa fellow. And he always seems to have really good ideas and ask me really good questions. Like, that's the kind of guy that doesn't get valued in organizations
right.
because he's not generating the most patents, but he was the deciding factor in how innovative Bell Labs was.
Yeah. And there's no stat for the assist.
Right, right, exactly, yeah. So when we started talking about growth and it kind of circled back around here to collaboration, what does it mean to actually make each other better? A lot of times the things that make each other better aren't measured, but that's the type of growth that we're interested in. And how do we help people help others grow?
Well? Yeah, there's really connections between all four of these themes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Where we talked about impact and meaning when we were talking about creativity.
Right.
People become more creative in groups in a lot of ways where we can give each other ideas.
Yeah.
Right. So we already talk about a lot of these themes in the Agile community.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it seems like this is bigger than that.
The Agile movement, if you want to call it that, I think is aligned with how humans work in a lot of parts of it.
The best expressions of it
are. That's a good way to put it. The best expressions of
Agile.
There's
some really dehumanizing Agile
applications of agile frameworks and processes. Right. Yeah, and a lot of our work often is going in and helping to clean those up a little bit, where, you know, somebody's called something agile and it really wasn't aligned with the meaning of agile or humanizing work. It's not aligned with these themes. It's not collaborative. It's not about growth. It's not about impact.
Right.
Or it's not about creating, right? And so that's a lot of our work is actually humanizing agile adoptions, which is kind of depressing, right? That sometimes, and I think this is true of any movement, is, you know, people get excited about it, it becomes a buzzword. People say, I need to check that box, but they do a kind of surface level engagement with the thinking behind it. So when I think about humanizing work, it's bigger than the Agile movement. In my time leading an Agile transformation, I was really curious about examples of Agile that started at a team level and spread out up into the organization and impacted all aspects of how the company worked. And I couldn't find any. I found one, which was Geonetric, which is our client, right? And it was a large factor in me joining Agile for All when I did. But very few examples of Agile having the impact that it promises and that I think it can have when done well. And so I started looking outside of the Agile community for examples of this thing that I thought of when I thought of the term Agile, which I would now describe as humanizing work. And
there really wasn't an umbrella phrase or word for it.
There wasn't. And you know, if you think even Agile itself is an umbrella term, what happened in 2001 is you had these software process inventors getting together, all with different named processes, and saying, what do we have in common? What's the theme here? What's the movement? And the Agile Manifesto was written, and they called it Agile. That's what this thing is. I almost feel like the same thing needs to happen now. We need the leaders of the Agile movement, the leaders of the Teal movement or the Reinventing Organizations movement, the leaders of the Beyond Budgeting movement. There are all these very aligned, related movements in the world that all call themselves different things. And as soon as you dig into it, you realize, oh,
they're pointing at the same things.
Exactly right, exactly. And I think there's a branding issue there, a marketing issue around those things. Like, can we all agree on a term? To me, humanizing work became how I thought about those things. Those aligned movements are all trying to humanize work in different ways. And so I think, you know, what I am hopeful of is that humanizing work becomes a movement like the Agile movement was and starts to unite these right now separate threads into a cool tapestry of something that really can change the world. We have minimal impact working on our own. We have greater impact when we work together on these things.
Yeah, we have a principle about that, right?
That seems like it.
Yes. Yes. And I think this also gives us a way to talk about why we like what we see with some Agile applications and others really don't feel right.
Yeah.
And in future episodes, we'll go deeper into particular aspects of humanizing work and feature some stories, interview some people who are putting this into practice.
The other thing we're going to do that I'm really excited about is talk about individual application. It's a big movement. It's changing the world. It's, you know, world peace. It can be tomorrow when I go to work, I'm going to humanize my work in this specific small way, but a way that matters. So we'll talk a lot about that in future episodes. We also want to invite members of the community to respond, to reply, to become part of this conversation. We want this to be bigger than Richard and I talking about this thing that we're excited about. If you're part of the Reinventing Organizations movement, part of the Beyond Budgeting movement, or if there's another movement that we've never even heard of that you say, hey, that's pretty aligned with what you guys are up to with this humanizing work thing, we would love to hear from you. So please reply, please comment, and tune in for future episodes where we'll talk about more of these things. And we hope our content evolves based on your comments, based on your feedback. We want you to be a co-author in figuring out what the humanizing work movement is all about.
Thanks for joining us.